episode 17 of More Victories, a.k.a. the Big Bowl Special. Joined by co-host Dougie Dash, we talk the first bowl games of the college football season. There are five on Saturday, and we like a couple of them. And then we bring on from the Action Network, John Ewing. He just put out this really awesome article about ways for bettors to exploit bowl season. He's also got a couple of plays for listeners on this Saturday when the bowls first kick off. We hit all that. We talk a whole bunch more on episode 17 of the Moral Victories podcast.
Sports. The thrill of victory.
If it doesn't fit, you must acquit.
The agony of defeat.
The Bears are who we thought they were.
Every loss teaches a lesson that's important for a young athlete's development.
I mean, I'm really disappointed in the progress that we've made.
But it's important to remember that sports is about having fun, not winning.
You're here for one goddamn specific reason.
What's that, Earl?
Jack us!
You're full of shit. Fuck you.
This is Moral Victories with Jared Shanker.
You really think I give a flying what the people on the radio call say?
Welcome to episode 17 of Moral Victories, the Big Bowl Special. It is the Big
the
Bowl Special. Yeah,
the BBS. BBS.
We are recording on December 11th, just a few days before the first bowl games kick off.
When is the first bowl game?
Saturday.
Saturday, okay.
I believe there are five. Actually, some pretty good ones.
What is it, like the, let me guess.
We get a little
it's
bit of
like,
Herm?
No. I'm going to assume.
Oh, the bowl names?
Yeah, this bowl, this bowl is probably like the Possum, the Indiana, like corn bowl feel. Like, who knows?
That was, think about it over the next 20 minutes. It'll come up with something better. There's the Bad Boy. I don't know if it's still around, actually. There's the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa.
The Gasparilla Bowl is always in Tampa, correct?
Yeah.
The RL Carrier Bowl is always in New Orleans.
That one, RL Carriers, has actually maybe been the longest running
obscure bowl out there.
Well, even like some of the other bigger bowls.
Is there a Tom Hortons bowl yet?
Tim Hortons.
Well, no, that's what I'm asking about his brother, Tom. Is there a Tom Hortons?
Tommy.
Because
I'm surprised Waffle House doesn't have a bowl game, to be honest. Because they're so concentrated into the South.
Yeah, they should just kind of jump on the Chick-fil-A bowl.
Just try to buy out the Chick-fil-A bowl.
With like a side of Waffle House.
I mean, there's enough games in the Atlanta area. I don't even know where they're located. Let's look. They're not even giving. I'm trying to find the good nicknames. But anyway, so we got five. I mean, like, there's actually a couple, like Herm Edwards is in. It might be the first game, the first official bowl game. Arizona State and Fresno State.
Which one is that?
The name? Oh God.
Yeah, you know it doesn't matter. Who's favored?
Fresno State is favored.
How do you feel about that?
I like Arizona State, and I think we're going to get into that in a little bit. Whoa, Fresno State favored.
Right.
They've been pretty good against the spread all year, and I think bowl games is where you can exploit that a little bit. Here we go. They are in the Mitsubishi Motors Las Vegas Bowl. Because when you think Mitsubishi, you think Vegas.
Yeah, you do. And you think Japan. Those are the two geographical areas that...
You think Mitsubishi?
Come to mind.
I don't know. Mitsubishi is still making cars.
They're not.
No, they just got motors.
Just motors.
They are the third... I guess technically the fourth bowl. There is the bowl game, I think, between the HBCUs called the Celebration Bowl. That usually kicks off bowl season, technically. North Carolina A&T, a 7.5-point favorite against Alcorn State.
Wow, Alcorn State. What
You know the most famous guy to come from there?
No, I don't.
Aaron McNair.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Steve McNair was Alcorn State.
Where is Alcorn State?
I believe it is Mississippi.
And what conference are they representing?
They might be the SWAC if they're ooh, HBCU. Alcorn State.
They don't play like a MEAC SWAC bowl or like
the MEAC SWAC bowl. So that might actually be what it is: MEAC versus the SWAC.
Yeah, I mean that's a bowl game every year. Shout out HBCU schools.
I know North Carolina A&T also like I said. HBCU.
What about Atlanta A&T? Do you know how they're? Are they shaping up this
year?
Wow,
you nailed that. It's a MEAC versus SWAC bowl game.
Thank you.
We're a very diverse podcast.
Yes, well,
we're down with the culture.
You know? But, yeah, I'm more concerned about how Atlanta A&T is going to do this year and how that drumline is shaking up.
Well, Nick Cannon probably got a little bit of free time.
Yeah, he does.
He got himself in a little bit of hot water.
I heard. Yeah,
defending Kevin Hart. He tried to bring up Amy Schumer and
yeah,
somebody else.
Yeah, he was digging through Twitter.
Yeah, it actually backfired.
It did.
Twitter was not appreciative of
his efforts to
shame Amy Schumer.
What is it called? When you get like he got ratioed. Pretty big
ratio. Every time I see ratio or like I think ratio, I think of Rufio.
Yeah. Schroeder Law.
Pretty interesting that they pretty graphically kill Rufio in that movie. In Hook. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You've seen Hook.
I do. I have.
I'm pretty sure I think he gets stabbed.
He goes out fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's shout out Rufio.
Yeah, he was a good one. He kinda looks like Tua, actually. I feel like from what I remember of what Rufio looked like, regardless, Big Bowl special.
Yes.
This is the Big Bowl special. We're not going to hit on every game, but we are going to hit on some of these early ones. A couple of things that I like to look for when I'm betting bowl games. I think a lot of the things that you see over the course of the season, obviously you can't throw out, but you kind of want to maybe fade what you normally would think. And we're going to have guest John Ewing, who contributes articles to the Action Network. He's going to be on with us later today.
Is the Action Network new? I saw that Rovell went over there.
Yeah, I did see that.
So I didn't know if that was something that was new, like now that sports gambling is legalized in most states, or if this is something that's always been around and now it's just more prevalent because sports betting.
Now, I want to say that they're like 2 years old now.
Okay.
Somebody who was over at ESPN, like one of the content lead guys at ESPN, I think started it or got in sort of at the ground level.
Okay.
And like he's kind of running the show over there maybe.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess maybe John Ewing will have the answers.
You should ask him.
And any Ewing allowed on this show. We record over Madison Square Garden. Anybody with the last name Ewing can come on whenever he wants. Knicks had a nice little cover streak against the Celtics, just obliterated last week, by the way. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
I didn't bet them. I'm done betting basketball.
Good.
Bowl games only. Probably stay away from the West Virginia Syracuse game, though. Do you see Will Grier's not going to...
I did. I did see Will Grier has chosen not to play, and I think that's probably the best thing he could do for himself. So,
or he's millennial quitter.
I think if you... Well, yeah, I know.
Are millennials ruining college football?
No, they're not. No, coaches are. And
could be millennials.
No, it's old men who are greedy that are ruining. If Will Grier was getting paid to play in this bowl game, my guy would be playing.
All right, if you're Will Grier, and... I think he's got a couple kids. I think my guy's been
definitely
married.
Definitely has one daughter.
I think he's been married, and he's been married for a little while.
Yeah.
How much money would you need? No, and he could be like he might. He's no guarantee to go in the first round.
No,
he's going first three rounds. How much money do you need to get paid up front for you to play in that game?
What's the third round guarantee? What's the guaranteed dollars on that?
Maybe 500K?
No, it's at least like $3 million.
Not for a third round, I don't think.
Over the course of the 4 years, cannot be just 500K.
The signing bonus you get right up the minute you sign the deal.
Right, but now you're talking about, I'm talking about guaranteed money. I think it's more than that.
I don't think so.
You can't get 500K. Yeah, I mean,
even like after Sammy B got 50
So then whatever mil, it is just whatever that signing bonus is.
Okay.
I need it to be the exact amount and or more of what my first contract's guaranteed money will be.
I wonder how far we are away from a player sitting out a playoff game. I don't think we're that far off.
I don't think we're that far off either.
Within
I think it
four
just,
years, I think you'll
oh,
see
yeah.
it happen.
Especially if they expand it to 8 teams. But I think I would have to be guaranteed a top like three pick, and I would have to be like on that eight seed playing against like Alabama,
where like, we're just gonna lose by 30 anyway,
right? Where I'm just like, you know what, I'm good on this.
Yeah,
but I don't. I think you know we've been pretty far removed from playing competitive sports, and I've pretty much lost every competitive bone in my body.
You're willing to lay down and die.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm not getting paid for it, then I really just don't care. But
Gus Johns,
wait, let me
right
finish.
On. Okay,
so I think that it would take. I think it's going to take a lot because I think these kids are still very competitive and they're competitors, obviously. So I don't think them sitting out is as cut and dry as it is me sitting here talking about them sitting out. Yeah,
I feel like I'd have a pretty, even I'm a competitive person, I feel like I'd have a pretty easy time not playing and just getting ready for the NFL draft.
I think, though, the feeling of letting down your teammates, as like cliche as that is, I think it's probably the biggest factor in somebody not doing it.
No, I agree. But
you need to take the cash.
You got to secure the bag. Yeah,
need to take the cash.
I would definitely take the money if I have no issue with people who want to sit out.
No issue.
At this point, it makes the most sense, especially if you're a running back, especially if you've had injuries before. Like if you're not 100% or close to it.
And never let somebody who already has money tell you not to take the money like coaches do, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would turn around to Nick Saban and be like, Nick, you made $7 million this year. I'm trying to get a slice.
Would you just not show up? Like, I don't know if I want to have that conversation with Nick where I'm just like,
you don't want me around the team, then I won't show up.
I missed the bus. No, we're just like,
oh. No, you gotta be a man and tell him, like, look,
just
I'm
like,
not
hey,
playing.
Yeah, well, you know what?
Because think about how bad that looks for you if you're preparing for the draft.
Obviously, I'm not being serious.
I'm just saying, if you're preparing for the draft.
Avoid confrontation at all costs.
Well, yeah, especially with Nick Saban.
Like, if I'm Tua next year and, like, we're going to go to the playoff, but I'm also going to be the number one pick, maybe I just, like, you know.
Yeah,
I oversleep.
Or if you're a captain, maybe you just go in and you lay your jersey on Nick Saban's desk, and you tell
him until the walk-on plays,
and you tell him I am being a captain, and you just walk out until the walk-on plays.
Bama would probably still win with the walk-on. I do give a small chance of Oklahoma to beat them, but it would be of the two. I think we talked about this last week. Of the two bowl games, that would be the one where I would be more inclined to say that one's a blowout and Notre Dame would cover.
But it's the Big Bowl special. So let's get into to those first couple games on Saturday. We were talking earlier. You liked the slate.
I do actually. I actually am very, very intrigued as to what we have on the slate. I like, and I think there's ones where people are going to be loading up on Utah State. The public will be loading up on Utah State because they were really good this year. I think you're going to see people loading up on Fresno State because they also were really good this year. I believe both of them are ranked. Utah State might not be ranked.
Utah State, while they are 10-2, are not ranked in the top 25.
Okay, regardless, people are going to see 10-2, and they're probably going to go with them. People are going to see Fresno State. They are ranked, correct?
Yes, they are currently at 21. They are the only ranked team playing on Saturday.
All right. And I think historically, and we'll talk to John about this, historically ranked teams versus unranked teams do not bode well in bowl games for the ranked team. I think what it is so now it's like, in this case it's a Saturday, but it might be like a random Wednesday night. People who normally don't bet are going to be betting on bowl games, and they're going to see a ranked team versus an unranked team, and now they know... Vegas knows to shade the line a little bit toward the ranked team because they know more people are going to be going in on there.
Right.
So, ipso facto, fade it.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you for my own knowledge and the listeners.
Sure. Ask.
Bowl games more so than other games because you do, I guess, anticipate the more average Joe Schmo betting these games.
Yeah.
where, you know, the lines then move in the favor of the favorite.
Yeah. Who are you more back?
Right. Are you more likely to just fade the public every single time? And if you don't really know, if you don't really have an inclination one way or another.
So I think.
Fade the public?
I think if you want to bet the game for the sake of betting the game, and you don't have a feel one way or the other, I would probably say don't bet it, but that's not what I'm going to do.
This isn't a betting. There's only podcast.
There's only 40 games left on the slate. I'd say bet them all.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not like North Carolina A&T versus Alcorn State starting to look pretty good right now. But no, I would say
it's a sexy game. It's a sexy matchup.
It is. I think last year it was split down the middle between favorites and underdogs covering.
Okay.
But I think over the last 4 years, I think it's been pretty even, actually. I wrote all this down, and I didn't bring it in.
Well, right.
Yeah, obviously.
That's
poor preparation on me. But
we go off a feel.
It might have been last year that the underdogs won more games, and then I think they might have been even 2 years ago, and then favorites. Over these last 3 years, I think it's pretty much gone big underdog year, big favorite year, and pretty much split down the middle. But with the underdogs, I highly suggest going money line a lot because
when you do hit, you're just it's that much better. Or
the underdogs hit a lot more during bowl season as far as winning outright. And I had this all written down. I would have had, my argument would have been so perfect if I just actually, you know, I literally spent probably 2 hours.
Well, look, fundamentals are a crutch of the week, so you're just gonna have to
fail to prepare.
Rear back.
You prepare to fail.
You know what they say about starters is that a third of the time they go out there, they have their really great stuff. A third of the time they go out there and they don't have anything.
Yeah.
And then it's those other 10 starts a year that decide if you're good or you're not.
Mm.
So what's it going to be today? You don't have your best stuff and you're out there just figuring it out.
I would say 80% of the time, based on my memory.
Okay.
Which is strong in this regard, because I did spend a lot of time looking into this. 80% of the time, if not more, when an underdog covers in a bowl game over these last 4 or 5 years, they've won outright.
Okay. Right. So
if you were to just take every single money line underdog and
throughout the bowl season
and they split down the middle between favorites and underdogs, you are profitable.
Right.
And it's even some of the bigger ones have won outright. I think Wisconsin was close to a touchdown last year in a big bowl game. UCF, I think, was a 9-point underdog. A few years ago, Ohio State, big underdogs in the national championship and in their semifinal against Alabama in the first playoff. They cover both. So I think when you look at some of these, I don't know if I would do it this year with Clemson and Alabama, at least in those two high-profile ones, I've taken a money line and underdog there. But in pretty much all the other ones, especially some of the bigger ones where, like, Oklahoma State is a pretty big underdog. I don't know if I would take Florida to beat Michigan outright. But I think, Oklahoma State, an 8-point underdog. Northwestern, a 7-point underdog. NC State, 5-point underdog.
I got a question
Iowa.
For you.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl.
Personal favorite every year, but Army is in there, right?
Yeah. Houston and Army.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Is Houston used to have, and I'm just basing this on like, I'm basically pulling like a Michael Wilbon where like I haven't actually watched a team in like 4 years, so mm-hmm. I'm just basing this off of like historically what they've been.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, Houston scores a ton of points because at one point they did.
Yeah.
I have no idea if they scored over 40 points this year in a game. What I do know, though,
is
that
used
Army,
to?
I know that they used to score a lot of points, and I know that Army doesn't score many points.
All right.
So to see Army favored by 3,
mm-hmm.
it makes me just, like, how? Explain to me that game.
So Army has been good for the last few years.
Good as, like, a...
They took Oklahoma to overtime.
Okay.
In Oklahoma.
Good. That's pretty good.
And I believe they now have 2 straight back-to-back 10-win seasons. They're not playing the world's greatest schedule.
That's what I'm saying.
But they're playing enough where 10 wins is impressive.
Okay.
So I think that's a situation where people see Army. They just saw Army beat Navy.
Yeah.
They just see 10 wins next to Army's name. And they're like, all right, I'm going to go Army.
Because it's really like a pick 'em, right? I mean, minus three. It's
in college, you know, when you get to, you know, that three, you know, you're
yeah.
In the NFL, especially with the new PAT rule, that, you know, the games are going to end on, and points are so much more at a premium.
Right.
When you, if, you know, plus three is a lot different than just taking the team money line. In this case, and how we're already saying, you might as well go money line in a bowl game because it's hitting pretty often, much more than you would at during the regular season. If you are going to fade Army, yes, I would say take the money line of Houston. Though Houston probably not going to score a ton.
Okay.
They lost their quarterback. They are not the same type of high-octane offense that they had been
their
2 years ago. Doesn't seem like a guy. I've heard stories that he's just a huge ass.
Yeah, I mean, I'm team Ed Oliver all day anyway.
So. Man was cold.
Yeah.
Grew up in Texas.
Like, I like jackets, all right? Don't tell me I got it.
Grew up in Texas. Let the man wear a jacket. He's going to be a top five pick. Nothing about this, like, you treat everybody the same.
That's not very petty.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So that's what, getting back to the, oh, there's a Jared Birmingham Bowl.
Ooh.
Huh. Interesting.
Oh, yeah, Memphis and Wake Forest.
Go Wake Forest, money line.
Okay.
Underdog, money line.
Okay.
No, but being serious, money line, underdogs, they pay in bowl season. If you're going to take a underdog, I would seriously consider, if not just listen and do it, sprinkle a little bit of money on the underdog. And I think in the interview with John over at John Ewing over at Action Network, he's going to have a, I would hope, a similar feel. He wrote an article recently about some ways to exploit bowl season, and we're going to get to that interview now. And now joined by an analyst for the Action Network, John Ewing. John, how is your evening going so far as we get ready for the big bowl kickoff on Saturday?
Jared, thanks for having me on. Yeah, looking forward to bowl season. Of course, a little sad that football's coming to a close, but gotta love this time of year with the holidays, the extra games, and a lot more action.
It is a very bittersweet sort of feeling when the first Saturday of bowl season comes, because it's like I only have 40 more games that I can watch and potentially make money on. But then you also get football pretty much every single day of the week for the next 3 weeks between bowl games and NFL games. So it's a very bittersweet give and take for this these last few weeks of the year.
Definitely. Always sad to see it go, but like you said, with so many games, you're getting it almost every day. It's a great way to end the season.
So first thing I want to ask you is, as the tide has turned publicly perception-wise as far as sports betting, it's becoming legalized places. It's being talked about openly on on broadcasts. It used to be alluded to, you know, how this touchdown might mean something for people out there, a certain subsection.
Right.
Now it's just talked about openly. The line and the total is pretty much right next to every single box score. So curious as to how you've gotten into working as an analyst with the Action Network and being part of what used to be considered a degenerate community and now is actually something a lot of people are tuning into and kind of incorporating into their own sports viewing.
Yeah, I got my start actually by listening to a podcast just like this. It was Chad Millman's Behind the Bet. If you're familiar with that on ESPN,
sure.
Who now I actually work for Chad here at the Action Network. So my career started just by listening to a podcast, and then I got into sports analytics and went back to school and got my master's in business analytics. So began at Prediction Machine, which was a simulation modeling site, moved from there to Bet Labs and then Bet Labs. And Sports Insights, which were two sister companies, got bought up and became part of the Action Network. So, I mean, that's a quick kind of my path into sports betting, sports analytics. But like you said, with betting becoming more mainstream, you know, you used to go onto ESPN on their score page, and there was nothing gambling related. Now the spread and the over-under are listed right next to the start time and the channel. So it's just becoming more and more popular, and, you know, since I'm in the business, I love it. It's great.
I think my eyes are drawn to the line and the total even before the network that the game is on or the kickoff time at this point.
It's what everyone wants to know. I mean, it used to be, like you said, it used to be in the shadows, but now it's out in the light, and people like to know if their team's expected to win, if they should expect a shootout or a close, you know, a defensive battle. It's all interesting, not just to bettors, but to casual fans as well.
And one thing we were talking about, me and my co-host, Dougie Dash, we were talking about a lot of the things that you had mentioned in a new article you just put up about a couple of trends to make your bowl season a little bit more profitable. And like I said, it went up this week, this show coming out on Thursday, and wanted to see what have you been able to pick up in your research about some profitable trends that people can take with them to, if not make money this bowl season, at least save enough, at least break even, and, you know, make sure that they can get a few gifts for the family come Christmas time.
Yeah, you know, the Action Network, specifically with the Bet Labs product, we have a huge database of historical betting information that we can leverage to find historical trends that at least get you pointed in the right direction, or, as you said, at least not make a little profit this bowl season. And there's a couple general trends that I think your listeners should follow when they start handicapping these matchups. And a lot of them are contrarian takes, you know, going against your gut instinct. And that's often where you find value in sports betting. One of the first things to do when you look at a bowl game is just simply fade ranked teams. These top 25 teams always get a disproportionate number of bets, because if, you know, a public bettor is just looking at a random bowl game, you know, what do they really know about it? Probably not much between these two teams. You know, they haven't seen Boise State or Boston College play before. So they'll see Boise State's ranked 25, and they'll probably put their money down on that side. Odds makers know this is a tendency for casual bettors, so they inflate the lines. And what we've seen is if you bet against ranked teams, or every ranked team since 2005, you hit about 52% against the spread. So there is some value just intrinsically betting against every team. Where you really want to wager on these ones is a unranked opponent against a top 25 team. They've gone 56% against the spread since 2005. One example, Arizona State. They're getting 4 points right now against number 19, Fresno State. So real simple. But again, it's shown historically that there is some value in being able to fade, you know, the top 25 team, especially against an opponent that, you know, casual fans might look at as inferior.
Is that a product of now we have a game on Wednesday that normally a person might just be, maybe they're not watching sports that day, or they maybe just kind of tune into an NBA game that they're not going to bet on because they don't know the sport. And now you're going to get so much more of a bigger handle on the game if you're an odds maker, that you're going to shade the line, maybe an extra field goal or however many points that you wouldn't have if it was just you know, a typical Saturday game that gets buried on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think you're right. These games will have a larger handle. You know, in the New Mexico Bowl, it's North Texas, Utah State. If that was on any given Saturday, it's not getting as much action, but this game will take and have as many tickets as, you know, a matchup of SEC teams would. So there's going to be more action. Oddsmakers know that, and they're just simple contrarian strategies of fading ranked teams, betting against the public, of fading the chalk, that all has shown to be profitable. Example with underdogs. We know the public loves betting on favorites. In every bowl game since 2005, the team that's favored has received a majority of tickets. 76% of the game. So the chalk almost always gets the majority of bets. Again, a situation where the bookmakers understand this tendency, and so they can shade the lines. They can make recreational gamblers take bad spreads, which has led to value on the underdog. So all dogs in bowl games have hit at 52% against the spread since 2005. And then if you look at dogs that are getting little public support, they've done even better. So teams getting less than 40% of bets, 123-88. That's a 58% win rate against the spread. And teams getting less than 30% of bets, 35-19-1. That's a 65% win rate. I know the samples start going down smaller and smaller, but I think it just, again, it kind of proves the overall theory that, the public's going to be on the favorite, so the underdog has value, and the more the public is confident the favorite's going to cover, the better it is to be on the side of the book and fade the chalk.
Yeah, I love taking underdogs. I love taking the huge underdogs, even like some real dogs with fleas, especially during the year, some teams that are, 25, 30 points, or usually that. One I didn't take this year, but I generally love to take, is that week two game where Alabama's playing a group of five team, and it's usually 40-something points, and there's just so much value there. But then there's always some dogs that just feels like there's too many, it's a dog with too many fleas that I just can't bring myself to take. And I wonder for you, just, anecdotally, personally speaking, you have your predictive model that you use and the numbers that you have, but you ever just run into a situation where it's just like, man, I cannot bring myself to taking this underdog? Because I found myself, like, even with the Browns last year, it seemed like the sharps and the numbers always said, go Browns, and the sharps and the wise guys kept doing it, and it wasn't paying off. For like, sometimes it's just, man, I cannot bring myself to taking this underdog. I just wonder if you ever see yourself in that situation and that happens to you, or you're pretty good at, I just got to, believe in the numbers and believe in kind of what history has kind of portended for these types of scenarios.
Oh, I was right there last year on the Cleveland taking the points with the Browns, and I got burned repeatedly, but I think that was more fluke than anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, historical trends pointed to the Browns. Our simulation models pointed to the Browns as well. I think that was just the Hugh Jackson factor, which, there's not a filter or a input that we could place on, I guess, how bad of a coach he was. So that's, lesson learned.
There's no adjustment for Hugh.
Yeah, not, or at least not enough of adjustment. But, speaking towards these college bowl games, it's always great to have general trends that can point you in a direction, but I do factor more than just, a betting trend when making a pick. I love looking at the Action Network's power rankings, which give projected spreads for games. I also use S&P Plus, which looks at per-play data and does projections for college football games as well. So when everything lines up, if there's, if the public's on one side and I'm getting a favorable line and the power rankings and the projections all say that this team is undervalued, that's when I love to jump on a team. 'Cause the more information you have, the better you're going to be at handicapping games.
One that people generally look toward, one type of scenario that I think people in bowl games look to, is to automatically go against a team that might have an interim coach or might have lost their coach. But I think sometimes, I don't know what the numbers bear out, and maybe you do. It feels to me that there isn't a significant disadvantage for those programs that are in a bowl game under a skeleton staff or an interim staff. I know personally, I think Mississippi State last year had pretty much been ravaged and was able to win and cover Georgia 2 years ago. I think when they lost Mark Richt, I was covering that game. They were playing Penn State, I believe, in the Tax Slayer Bowl, and they were able to cover with Brian McClendon and pretty much like a bunch of GAs coaching with them. Anything on interim coaches or programs going through staff changes as far as something that can be exploited there?
Yeah, actually, we just talked about this as a team today, and I'm going to update the article tomorrow. But I had pulled the numbers last year, looking at interim coaches since 2005. There have been 54 bowl games since then where an interim coach had coached a bowl game, And what we found is that in those games, those teams were just 24-29-1 against the spread. That's a 45% win rate. So nothing too exciting one way or the other. And I kind of broke it down by favorites and dogs. And what I saw was that underdogs were just 7-18 straight up and 10-15 against the spread. So again, not a huge sample to draw strong conclusions from, but that against the spread record for underdogs was at a 40% win rate, which if you just remember, I said every single underdog had hit at 52% against the spread in the other bowl games. So what I kind of drew from that was that these underdogs are underperforming when they have a coaching change, because if they're an underdog, they're likely have inferior talent, and so then a coaching change only makes that situation worse. So a little interesting angle there, maybe if you think a coaching change could hurt the team and the team's an underdog, then maybe this would be a situation where betting on the favorite could have pay dividends.
And I did all this data while watching the Army game this past weekend, looking into not only the favorites versus dogs, who won how many games over these last 4 or 5 years, but how often not only did the underdog cover, but the underdog won outright. And it seemed like a disproportionate number of underdogs win outright during bowl season than they do during the regular season, where there's a lot more value or opportunity to sprinkle some money on the money line on the underdog if you are going to take one. And I wonder if that is something you've seen as well, where even for some of the bigger underdogs, whether like Wisconsin was almost a touchdown last year, UCF was, I think, 9.5 last year, or even these huge underdogs for someone like Oklahoma State this year is an 8-point underdog. If you've seen that, you know what, if you're going to take an underdog during the bowl season, you definitely should at least put a little bit on a money line wager as well.
Okay, here, I'll ask you this question.
Sure.
I looked at every single game and looked at the money line, the number of tickets on the money line. How often do you think the team that got a majority of money line bets went on to win the game?
The majority of money line bets to go on and win the game. I would say not as often as the other way.
Very good. Of course, I was setting you up there.
I know. I almost had to think about it. I was like, all right. And I said my answer so weird that I feel like I gave myself enough wiggle room to get out if need be.
The team getting less than 50% of the money line tickets won the game outright 55% of the time. That's over a 400 game sample. So if you bet $100 on each one of those teams, you would be up over $5,500 since 2005.
That's
it's just
nice
pretty
number.
Crazy. Yeah, those are really great returns there. And most of those teams are underdogs. So if you just looked at betting the underdog on the money line, you would have won only 37% of the games. But because you're getting plus money, a $100 better would be up over $3,000. So there's value even betting these favorites if they're the unpopular side to win outright. Which a lot of times, too, you'll see that bettors don't want to lay, $1,000 to win $100 on, like, a sizable favorite. That's why they'll go to the spread instead. But there can be value there in getting them to win the game, but maybe not necessarily cover.
And really quick, we'll wrap up on these last two. We talked more about the two playoff games on this show last week as the college football rankings had just come out, and didn't hit on it too much earlier in the show, but because those are obviously the premier games, wondering what you've been able to mine, if anything, on the two playoff games so far. Big favorites in each. Last I saw that Alabama was holding strong at a 14-point favorite, and Clemson was around 11.5, 12. I saw a disproportionate amount of money. Even though the ticket count looked pretty close to even from what William Hill had, that the ticket count between Alabama and Oklahoma was close to even, but like almost 90% of the money on Alabama. Notre Dame and Clemson looked a little bit closer. just from what you've been able to mine in your own data, what you've seen is where the money's going and what your own predictive models are saying. What can you tell us about those two playoff games?
Just in the college football playoff, there's only been two teams previously that were double-digit favorites. Both of them were Alabama, and the Tide won and covered in each of those games. When we look, you are right, the betting percentages are pretty evenly split right now. Notre Dame's getting 55% of the tickets, while Alabama is getting 53% in their semifinal matchup. One thing that's interesting to me about Bama-Oklahoma is obviously there's a big disparity here between these teams on the defensive side of the ball. The Sooners have just been a sieve, allowing everyone to rack up huge yards and points. And I got a system that looks at backing the better defensive team over a good offensive team like Oklahoma. And in my database, these teams like Bama have covered the spread 60% of the time since 2005. So maybe a little lean there on the Tide, even though I know I've been saying take underdogs.
take underdogs, but let's take the biggest favorite out there this bowl season.
That's perfect. That's how I'll end it. Talking dogs and then saying bet Bama. Like I said, you know, there's general trends that we talked about, fading ranked teams, betting underdogs. But sometimes, you know, you need to incorporate more information. If there's, you know, sometimes our models will point a different way. That's what you just have to incorporate as much information as possible to make the right choice.
And leave us with this. There's 40-something games out there. I'm going to want to bet them all. I'm sure whoever's listening is going to want to bet them all. But from what you've been able to look through, your numbers, some of those trends that we saw earlier, give people, if you have them, a couple games that you're looking at that you think are ones that you like the most as we head into to the kickoff on Saturday.
Sure. You know, another idea that we didn't touch on, but quickly, it's betting teams that have been bad against the spread during the regular season. These teams often get overlooked because of recency bias. The public remembers teams that failed to cover, and often, even if they don't mean to, they'll bet against them. So it's like a subconscious thing for them. And so bad teams against the spread have covered about 60% of the time since 2005. If they face a team with a winning against the spread record, it jumps up to 65% against the spread. One example of this, and it's this weekend, it's North Texas. They were 4-8 against the spread. They're 8-point underdogs against Utah State, who went 9-3 against the spread in the regular season. I already played North Texas, so that's one I think your listeners should jump on and give them a little action to start the bowl season here. And then, you know, I mentioned Arizona State as a play against number 19 Fresno State, and then an example of an underdog that's really unpopular right now. Only 22% of spread tickets are on Northern Illinois plus 2.5 against UAB. That fits pretty much everything we've said, underdogs, betting against the public. So those are a couple plays right now that I've already wagered on. And, of course, the great thing about the Action Network, we have a sweet app that is download for free, and you can follow all my picks in there as well.
Oh, so everybody go ahead and do that. Download the app, follow his picks, and it sounds like it'll be a profitable bowl season. The NIU one I was eyeing up as well. I didn't take the Huskies in the MAC championship, though. I told a couple of friends to take it, and ended up being profitable for them, and I missed out. But I think with UAB, that maybe some people are just buying into, not that they're not a good team, but the conference that they're in is not very good. I mean, what does it say about the conference if you come in a team that didn't exist for 2 years and wins it within mm-hmm. its second year? So I think people are maybe buying into the story a little bit and forgetting that NIU has generally been a pretty solid MAC program. So that was one that I was eyeing up as well. But this was a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on and shedding some light and helping people make a little bit of money this holiday season.
I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun.
Great. So go ahead, download the app, follow his picks, and look forward to chatting again.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
And wrapping up episode 17 of Moral Victories, Doug, in the thick of things, to win his against the spread pool. I'm sure a lot of you out there probably do something similar. You got to pick five games against the spread every single week. You got to go 5-0 to win the money that week. And then, of course, everything accumulates over the course of the season. And then you are three games out with 3 weeks to go after a 5-0 week?
Yeah, that's correct. Went 5-0 this past week. If I can remember it, it was Giants,
Indy,
Hawks, Boys, and Niners, and hit those five. So that's nice. 3 games back, 3 weeks to play. I think I probably, realistically, at the very worst, can go 11-4, depending on how the other guys do.
You go 11-4 and win it?
And still possibly win it, depending at the worst, depending on how the other guys do.
I think you got to go 12-3 to have a realistic shot.
The number one guy in the league has not got more than three picks right since week 9. 3-1, 3-3, 3. So he's consistent, but
which I mean, law of averages says he's probably got a 4-win. Yeah, he's probably good for a 4-win. I think to have any shot of actually winning, you need to go at least 12-3.
Maybe, but we'll see. Okay, so early this week so far, looking at some of these matchups. Staying away from Thursday night, Chargers, Chiefs.
Who knows if Melvin Gordon's going to play?
Thursday night games, why bother? You know, you lose that game, your week is already pretty much
You're behind the eight ball.
But if you win that game, it's nice knowing you just need to hit a four-bagger on Sunday.
Yeah.
But such is life.
Saturday this week, I believe. There's Saturday games this week, too.
Yes, there is. And I will be playing one of those. I will be taking the Texans -6.5.
At the Jets. Okay.
I like Houston to bounce back. They're much better than the Jets. I feel pretty comfortable taking that game.
All right.
The other Saturday game, Broncos-Browns. Browns are now a team I just stay away from. Every game I bet them, I just seem to have no feel on it, mm-hmm. So I'm giving up.
They're starting to get more support.
They've burned me the last like three weeks, so.
I was on them last week, which was nice.
I was on Carolina. That's another team.
They're burning a lot of people
this year. That's another team that I'm done with.
They haven't covered in a little while. All right, so that's two. That's one. All right, Texans.
Four more winners, right.
We got to win this. We got to win this pool. I'm invested in this now. The people are invested in this now.
I think, a lot of these games I don't love. I'll take the Titans getting 2.5. Against the Giants. I don't know where that's coming from. Titans aren't that good either, but
it's going to be a terrible game.
It's going to be a bad game, but I just don't think the Giants.
That's a game center game. You follow on your iPhone.
I like the Lions coming back playing against the Bills,
getting a couple points on the road.
Yeah, Matty P's got them practicing out in the snow every single week though, preparing for these late season games. So I'm going to say that pays off.
Okay.
I got to take the Patriots. They just kind of own the Steelers.
Yeah.
Steelers are floundering. Pats, I mean, after losing that game,
they should have lost to the Steelers in Pittsburgh.
They should
last
lose
year.
To the Steelers every
Pretty
game.
Pretty much every year, yeah. And they somehow win.
Exactly.
You're right.
So
you're right.
I got it. I like history on my side there. I think that is five. That's a quick
That's
five.
Four. That's four.
Is it? Oh god.
Pats, Lions,
Houston,
and I'm not even giving us three. Pats, Lions, Houston.
Yeah, Pats, Lions,
only three. Wow,
Houston.
You're not even close.
No, I'm Jesus. Not close. I thought I was getting away with it there. Let's see.
Miami getting 9.5. How do
no.
you feel about that? No,
too many points from my blood.
Seems fishy.
Yeah, I don't. Big lines.
I like Carolina. As a 7-point. I know.
I'm running out of teams to get burned by and big spread, so I'm struggling here.
It'll be late in the year. Saints are on the road. They're not going to be in the dome. Carolina's fighting for their life.
They are.
They could just be fold, but yeah. A home underdog getting a full touchdown.
You and I talked about this the other night. I'm on the Seahawks. I'm on the Seahawks for the rest of the year.
Yeah, they're rolling. Although yesterday was a slapdick football game.
It was, but they outplayed Minnesota every minute of that game. But I got them here given 5.5. So I like them to win by a touchdown.
I saw they brought in Jeff Triplett to like announce. These
Yeah, ESPN.
Networks
ESPN,
literally bring in the referees that have been ridiculed the most in their life.
Yeah, it's like, oh, everybody loved Jeff Triplett when he was a ref. Let's bring him in.
He was literally the most hated referee by fans, coaches, and players. Mike Carey was known as always fucking up and always getting it wrong when CBS would bring him in. The only one that's good is Gene Steratore, who I think replaced Mike Carey.
He did replace Mike Carey. Packers, Bears? Packers at home? Bears at home, forgive me. -5.5. That feels like a game in my brain that I said Bears win.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a game that, like, Aaron Rodgers just covers somehow.
You think? I don't know. I think Bears might be rolling.
Bears are rolling, but I also...
Five's a lot.
I refuse to give them any
you really do.
Any love. So.
You really do hate the Bears. All right, so that's the five pack? Is that is Green Bay's in? All right.
Yeah, it's the five pack. And just I've been having a massive cold attack this
last 10 minutes.
My voice has dropped about... 3 octaves, and I'm really limping to the finish here. So
yeah, so let's wrap it up.
Forgive me. That is it.
We thank John Ewing for coming on and shedding some light on how to exploit bowl season on the Big Bowl Special.
The Big Bowl Special, Big the BBS. Bowl,
the BBS. We might have a few shows between now and the national championship, but we'll see. We'll see what the schedule
could be.
Like.
It could be an upcoming hiatus.
We record on Tuesdays generally. Christmas is a Tuesday. New Year's Day is a Tuesday. Not really helping out here, but I'm sure we'll try to get something in. We'll definitely be here next week, and so we'll have a little bit more bowl roundup and another outlook toward the upcoming bowl games. But for now, the Big Bowl Special in the books. Thank you for listening. As always, we will be back next week.